It is time for This Week in the Lakeville Journal. We have both Janet and John on the line with us. Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
And how are you both this last warm morning that we're going to have for a couple of days?
A couple of days or a few months, yeah.
So I said to somebody yesterday, I said, listen, just leave the dogs outside. You might not see this until April.
No, we're going to get some more warm weather next week.
Could be on the other side? Okay,
yeah.
Good.
Because we'll also get more rain with it, but it'll be warm.
I put me down for rain, but warm.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let us go to the front page of the Lakeville Journal. And it's interesting, coming in to work this morning, listening to All Things Considered, talking about COVID, talking about the flu, and now this new respiratory infection affecting young people and elderly people. And I look at the front headline of the Lakeville Journal, pathogen spread, schools, nursing homes, and hospitals on alert, because it's a combination of things that are all coming to be this fall and this winter.
That's right. Our reporter, Deborah Alexenis, has done a great job of rounding up this particular problem that involves the flu returning, coronavirus kind of revisiting our environs, and also this new resurgence of a respiratory virus that really targets the young. There's an idea behind this that there's more social activity, and combined with waning immunity, it leads up to this problem of just a pathogen spreading around. It's at schools, nursing homes, and the hospitals also seeing a resurgence of these children with RSV. It's a respiratory virus that afflicts the lung and can cause severe illness. Dr. Marshall at the hospital is very concerned about, you know, how this could play out. The Center for Disease Control also has pointed out that it's a particular problem in Connecticut, New York, and New Jersey. So we did a nice story looking at what it means around here, and then at the Cornwall, at the Salisbury School, there was a bit of an outbreak as well. And that had to do with really a private event at Salisbury Central School. So Sharon's bracing for higher numbers. The nursing homes are under control, and I think the schools are pretty well, too. Lisa Carter pointed out that all the way through from the beginning of October, there really had not been any kind of a positive case, but now we're dealing with something different.
Yeah. All right, move on to another story that is good news in the fact that the state is following up on a promise they made. They don't always do that. And we're talking about your story, John, your story about the restoration of all those trees that were taken down.
Yes, this is a story about how two parties who were at odds with each other, basically warring, now are collaborating, and down at the Housatonic Meadows, where a lot of oaks and pines were cut last winter, against the wishes of local environmentalists and those who love the park. This all sort of led through a bunch of legislation in the spring and some requirements for the state to restore some of the damage and plan for what the fallout from what they did is also presenting a problem for the river bank and erosion. So this is a sort of complicated deal, but last Tuesday on the 18th, state workers showed up with trees. They're planting, I think, 21 trees, and they're putting together what is called a rain garden to capture runoff from the parking lot so it won't end up in the river. And also ways in the spring they will be back out there going after the invasives and doing some more planting. So the other thing is the state workers are actually now taking a tree warden course, so they are learning more about what is a hazardous tree.
Well, you know, this all goes back to the old saying, people used to say, you can't fight City Hall. Well, that's not true. The very group of individuals that got together during the initial cutting got together and got a hold of politicians, our local representatives, and presented a plan that now the rest of the state will benefit from, and that is when the state goes in to do something like this, they'll communicate it in advance, and they'll put together with the local authorities, that people that are involved, they'll put together plans to remediate what they do. So it's amazing what one protest can do, how now it's going to affect statewide policy.
Yes, and one small point to make is that the issue really for restoration is that DEEP, State Department, DEEP doesn't really have any money to do this, but they managed to figure out a way to use the Connecticut Passport to Parks program, which is something that everybody in the state who has a motor vehicle pays into when they register their vehicle. So actually, all across the state, people are paying for these trees down in Housatonic.
All right. Did an interview with a couple different food pantries over the previous week. The latest one with the one up in North Canaan, and pleased to see your story, which is going in and explaining that area food pantries now, which have been ever since COVID really hard pressed and put into overtime action, they're now facing their busiest time of the year. On top of all that.
Right, and they're actually reaching out for support themselves. The one in North Canaan, Fishes and Loaves, serves about 130 households a month, which is considerable, 300 people.
Yeah, I spoke to them, and when they started out, they served about 40 people.
Wow,
that's the difference.
Yeah, and then the Corner Food Pantry in Lakeville serves actually a greater number, about 400 households on average, for that's close to 1,700 people. And they get their food from a variety of sources, Sharon Farm Market, LeBond's, as well as local farms like Hotchkiss School, Adama, Gordon Ridgeway, Q Farms, and Food Hub. So it's a community effort.
It's a community effort, and then you have the Sunday in the Country Food Drive, which goes into overdrive at this time of the year for food pantries in New York and Connecticut. Salisbury Bank has their food collection program that they do at their different events. So it really is a community-wide effort that goes from individuals, volunteers, and even businesses. There was a very funny person in town. Roy Blount Jr. Was in town with his very, very down-to-earth humor.
Yes, this was a talk sponsored by the Salisbury Forum last Friday at Hoosie, and it had a near-capacity audience. He is, Roy Blount is perhaps best well-known for being the author and storyteller on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and formerly on Prairie Home Companion. But he's also a writer, and has been an actor and poet and journalist. So he delighted everybody with his down-to-earth humor.
I want to move on to page A3, and they're both right at the top of page A3. One by Deb Alex Ennis, Housing is a Big, Urgent Challenge, and the other one by Lila Hawken, Cornwall Housing Forum, looks at persistent issues.
Yes, I mean, they both, it's a companion pair of stories here. The Deborah story looks across the county, and what's nice to note here is that there were some awards handed out. Litchfield County Housing Affordability Summit is what it was called, and Jim Dresser, who in Salisbury donated 5.3 acres of land for affordable housing units, was given the YIMBY Award, which is Yes in My Backyard, as opposed to NIMBY. And he was joined by housing advocates Virginia Bush Sutman of Kent and Ann Kremer of Salisbury, who were given Lifetime Achievement Awards. The Cornwall story is interesting. They just named a new housing advocate named Jessica Brackman. And Gordon Ridgeway started this panel off by noting that the median house price now in Cornwall has risen 30% over the past year, and that across Litchfield County, 46% or almost half of young adults are living with their parents, which is kind of a shocking fact.
It reminds me of the old comedian's joke, you know. And I'll be honest with myself. I mean, at one point, after I left eight or nine years of work in Kingston, I spent a couple of months while I was regrouping and putting something together at my mother's house. And God bless her, because she had a lot more patience for me than I had for her. Let's move on here, because there's a vote coming up. There's a town meeting coming up in Sharon tomorrow, but the Comcast portion of that town meeting won't be held, but that the town meeting is still going to be held. There's two other things, but the Comcast portion of it has to be rewritten, because it just wasn't legally put into the call for the town meeting.
That's right. And so this happened sort of at the last minute before we went to press, but you're exactly right. The vote on Comcast will be held at a later time once the town lawyer squares up the language of the illegal announcement. But meanwhile, tomorrow they're considering phase two of the town green improvement and purchasing two big highway trucks. But the Comcast proposal is the big ticket, and that, as everybody knows, will cost the town about $1.6 million, which is far less than it would have been if they'd had to somehow find a different way to get it. But it will it'll expand internet service to all homes in Sharon.
Well, what's interesting about it is the task force put together it to just to start, and it's only an estimate. Their own company would have cost $12 million, but then they would have had to hire technicians and people to run it. Comcast, which is doing something which most cable companies don't, is paying a little more than half the bill to do this, and the town then does not have to worry about running its own business. And it really is saves the town a lot of money. And if this proposal goes through, and I hope it does, it's going to set the stage for a lot of towns in Connecticut that are underserved to see that, wow, this is something that you can put forward to cable companies and is an answer to underserved communities.
That's right. It still baffles me that you can drive to very populated areas right here in Lakeville and have no internet.
Yeah, it's one of those things. And like I said, I think this is going to set the stage for statewide action by cable companies and communities. On the left of that, let's talk a little bit about the Eric Sloan Museum.
Yes, the Eric Sloan Museum hosted a Connecticut Antique Machinery Association event where professionals from fields including carpentry, woodworking, welding, plumbing, electrical wiring, and others came down and offered the opportunity for really younger people to get hands-on experience using the tools of the trade. And we have a photograph of a young girl who's learning to operate a floor loom. There were many other examples of hands-on experience at this event, and as well as technical training. And it was called Touch a Trade Event. We all know that the trades are vital to our future, and this was aimed at that, sort of exposing the next generation to what it's like to be able to make things with your hands.
And, you know, it's funny. Over the years, I've seen towns put forward sidewalk plans, North Canaan originally, and there was a lot of grumbling about it, but it worked out beautifully. Of course, you go to Falls Village, there was some grumbling about their sidewalk plans, and it's absolutely gorgeous how it wound up. And in Kent now, the selectmen are wrestling with that issues with some local residents. The first phase of their sidewalk work ends, and to me, it's very interesting, because when most of these are done, the public is extremely happy with what happens at the end.
Yes, I think so. In this case, it's a kind of a wrinkle in the project management. There was a $30,000 cost that was not included in a in a change order, and so all of a sudden they discovered that, oops, we've got a $30,000 bill. The purpose of this expenditure is to spray the new sidewalks with some kind of protective film that will prevent salt from penetrating, salt damage from the roads. So they went ahead and paid it, and they are going forward with phase two.
All right, and I saw signs for this for about a week and a half in advance of it, and then I actually saw the result of it, and I was surprised. I think it was probably one of their biggest turnout. The Housatonic Youth Service Bureau had their Falcon 5K benefit, and according to your headline, they drew over 100 runners.
Right. It was the first one they've ever had, and there were two or three different heat, so to speak, or entry level. The one that I liked the most was the 1 mile fun run for the younger crowd. And two brothers came in first and second on a photo finish. The younger brother actually outran his older brother. Very interesting to see that. Cute photo.
And of course, we remind people that coming up this weekend on the 30th is the Pumpkin Run in Kent, which raises money for the food pantry in Kent.
That's right.
And that is rain or shine. And as a matter of fact, it's meant to be actually a beautiful weekend both days. So there we are with that. We want to switch over now. Janet, bring you in because it's that time of year. I've now got to schedule a couple of interviews with various candidates. But we'll start it off with your editorial, Making a Difference to One's Community, Save Sharon Hospital.
Right. There are times that groups come up and make opposing views to what's happening in society, and sometimes they make a difference, sometimes they don't make much difference. This time, Save Sharon Hospital has clearly made a big difference in the way the issue of changes in services at Sharon Hospital is being seen. They brought forward the issues on labor and delivery closing and on the ICU changing that cannot be ignored. And it can, that's upheld by the fact that their recent rally had more than 300 people attend and leaders from all over the state. It's not often we get the state senator out here. As Dick Blumenthal pointed out, he was here in 2000 as well when the hospital was converting to for-profit Essent, and so he's got a long history with this hospital, and it was good to see so many involved.
And we also had representatives from New York State because the hospital, basically the largest share of the people that use the hospital do come from adjoining New York State. So it was a multi-state effort, including politicians and regular people and volunteers of Save Sharon Hospital. And now we wait for, once again, the hearings to resume in Hartford. So, and of course, because it's that time of year we're in, letters to the editor. We do have a letter about the Sharon Hospital, but also it's the time where people put forward their views.
That's right. Lots of political letters, but we have 2 pages worth of letters. Yeah. And because there are different things happening in the community now, they are not all political.
Yep. Nope.
We have a letter on Sharon needing townwide internet. Sharon Hospital, labor and delivery. We have a letter about the 50th anniversary exhibit for Noble Horizons at Salisbury Association. Don't miss that. It's a really important part of the town. So, and another letter on internet needed by all. That is a big issue in Sharon, and it's one that everyone in Sharon should be paying close attention to.
And you've got even a letter explaining more about the Salisbury-Sharon Transfer Station website.
Right. Barbara Bedigal, who sometimes writes columns for us on the transfer station, and this time wrote a letter to the editor because it was short, and she just wanted to get the word out about the website. So do take a look. I'm sure people run into that, they're getting ready to go to the transfer station. What can I take? Where does it go? Well, you can go right to the website and find out.
All right. And Well, I want to, right after that section, there was a big event that was held in Kent last weekend, and that was the initial forum on energy issues, and Lionel Hawkins has a story on that.
Yes, the Kent Memorial Library sponsored a Green Energy Initiative forum at Kent School, and it was led off by Maria Horn, who is on, you know, both the Environment Committee and the Energy and Technology Committee in the Assembly. And she started off by pointing out how complicated it is, energy policy, and started to list out some of the kinds of incentives that are out there. But it was a full discussion about how Connecticut, you know, is committed to getting its energy from other than carbon-based sources. And she went through a few ideas, including her own thought about, you know, getting her own EV, her EV vehicle. She drives all over the place, and she says, "I need to plan how I use my car." But it was a full discussion about how we use energy, how much we waste, and how we can find ways to reduce carbon dioxide emissions.
All right, well, to move on to the conference edition, this weekend is a good example. Sharon Audubon has two big events coming up on Saturday and Sunday. Crescendo has concerts coming up in both Trinity Lime Rock and in Great Barrington. And it's that time of year where Compass is packed.
Yes, it is. In fact, it starts off with a second part of Alexander Wilburn's review of what it's like to display controversial art in the countryside. We have here a sort of review by discussions with gallery owners in the northwest corner, KMR Arts, Five Points Arts, the Wasaic Project, James Barron, and Carol Corey, and they all sort of give their view on how they think about you know, sensational works or works that aren't quite appropriate for the northwest corner. So it was a very interesting conversation, and again, with Alex, extremely well written.
I love the headline, "Who Gets Nude in the Countryside?"
I know. And inside he has a little notice about the Alex Katz exhibit at the Guggenheim in New York. He also looks at the film, you know, Night of the Living Dead, which is going to be at the Warner Theater in Torrington. Tar, you know, the new film that's at the movie house in Millerton, and I guess a couple of other things too, but I can't see where they are right now.
Well,
there's Millerton Library Annex is going to have a talk by Ryan Lee Wong on a new novel.
And Hotchkiss School is continuing with their free concerts, where they bring in world-class musicians and artists to educate and work with students. But as a benefit of that, we get to see these concerts free, where normally it would cost $100 to $200 a ticket. And they have their fine arts quartet performing, as a matter of fact, tonight at 7 o'clock at the Eastman Auditorium, and it's absolutely free. That's a huge benefit that we get with Hotchkiss being in the community.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, it's such a beautiful venue to hear it at, too. The acoustics are amazing, and the Smithfield Church in Amenia,
yep,
has 19th century opera arias, gilded melodies. Don't miss those.
All right, and that is just some of what you'll find in the Lakeville Journal and Millerton News this week. TriCornerNews.com, home delivery, and also you can pick it up at newsstands. Guys, we'll speak to you next week.
Yes, I'll also throw in
TriCorner
Real Estate.
That's right, TriCorner Real Estate this week as well is in the mag. All right, we'll speak to you guys next week.
Thank you. Have a good week.
All right, bye-bye. Thanks, bye.
That is this week in the Lakeville Journal. TriCornerNews.com, as I said, and you can also find this show up on our on-demand page, robinhoodradio.com. Click on on-demand, click on This Week in the Lakeville Journal.